Mike, let me start with the obvious question. Why leave reporting in such a fertile climate for journalists as Rhode Island to take up teaching?
Ian, Rhode Island's always going to be a fertile climate for journalists. I could have the fountain of youth and live forever, and it would always be an eternal fountain of stories for us. But I guess I'm at the point in my life that this opportunity at the University of Connecticut came along, and it's a great one. And what really appealed to me about it is I'm not really leaving journalism. I'm still going to produce journalism, and I'm not leaving Rhode Island. I'm going to continue to live in Cranston, commute to Connecticut, and when I'm not teaching, I'm going to be writing and pursuing books and magazine articles and journalism.
What will your departure mean for the capacity of the Providence Journal to do investigative reporting, and do you know whether the journal will fill your position?
I don't know if they'll fill my position, but I do think that they're committed to continuing to try to cover the state the way we have historically. I mean, sure, these are hard times for newspapers everywhere. The economy's tough, particularly here in Rhode Island. Ad sales are down. The whole model is changing. There's a new generation of readers who I'll ironically be teaching who don't pick up a print edition. They pick up an iPhone. You know, but there's still that commitment to news. We're still an important institution in this state. And I've been really touched with the reactions of people. And that, to me, has really underscored the importance of the work that we do and my friends and colleagues will continue to do.
How do you see the outlook for investigative reporting more broadly? Do you think that news organizations and new organizations will be able to sustain investigative reporting? Or do you think that it is being diminished by the challenges we're seeing for traditional media?
Well, I think a good analogy might be the Navy. If you go down to Newport and look at the old Navy base, it used to be a powerhouse for our state and our economy. And the old big aircraft carriers model has kind of changed. Now you need to have kind of the swift mobile attack cruisers. And I think that we need to fuse, you know, the internet, social media, to get the word out. I mean, even just on a little thing, I was looking at my Twitter feed and there were these Providence High School students who were doing a sit-in over at Deborah Gist's office, and I tweeted about it, and we sent a reporter and a photographer over there, and I like that kind of model, and I think that the new generation certainly has not lost their appetite for news. Journalism school enrollments are up. People want news, and I think there will be a new model that will be developed. It's being developed now. As in anything, we're in kind of that frontier phase where there's going to be successes and failures, and there's going to be bumps along the way. But I am excited about the potential, and that's one of the things that, you know, I've spoken to journalism students and taught some classes, and I've been a writer, and that energizes me, and I hope that that continues too at UConn.
When you look back on your almost 30-year career at the Providence Journal, what story or what are the couple of stories that you're most proud of?
Well, it's funny, Ian, I'm thinking about it. I've been there for 28 years. That's just over half my life. I'm 55 years old. And, you know, I came here as a sports writer. I was hired to cover the Providence College in the Big East. I was hired a week after Rick Pitino. I covered him in the Final Four. I covered Brown football and actually got to play football, be a George Plimpton and be the last string halfback. I covered the Red Sox in the World Series when the ball went through Bill Buckner's legs. I had a news background when I came here. And I did a series of articles about the finances of the Big East and how much the coaches were making. And I got these IRS forms to document their salaries. And then the RISDIC banking crash happened in 1990. Tom Heslin, my editor, came to me and said, you know, you got those IRS forms for the Big East coaches. We need to get them for the credit unions that crashed. And that's how I became an investigative reporter. And I switched over to that, and we covered the RISDIC banking crisis, and then that led to stories about Tom Fay and the Supreme Court that won us a Pulitzer Prize, and then there were stories about Arthur Coya and Bill Clinton that I picked up because I was sitting in the sports department one day talking to my old friends, and Paul Kenyon, our golf writer, said, hey, Bill Clinton's coming to Rhode Island, and Arthur Coya is going to present him with a handmade golf club made by a local craftsman because his publicist just called here. And then a few weeks later, I read in the paper that the Justice Department was investigating racketeering at the Laborers Union. And I put two and two together, and we wound up doing stories about that. And a lot of my colleagues had moved on to other places, and I became the head of the I team, and I started working with people like Bill Malinowski and Tracy Breton, and did a series on Ed DePreet. We did a series on the Attorney General's strike force. Obviously, we did a lot of stories about Buddy Cianci that led to the book I wrote about him. Ross Chait, the professor at Brown, who had an amazing story about recovered memory of childhood sexual abuse. That was probably the most powerful story I've ever written. hundreds of responses, and this is before email was really big, but hundreds of letters from people who had been touched by that, who had been abused themselves or knew people who had.
You mentioned Buddy Cianci, and as you say, you did write the unauthorized biography of him, the Prince of Providence. There's speculation now about whether Buddy might be a candidate for mayor next year if Angel Taveras moves on in Providence. What do you think?
You know, I'm a reporter like you, Ian. I'd like to ask him that question. In fact, it's funny. After I announced I was leaving the Journal last week and I got a lot of calls from people, Buddy's producer over at PRO called me and said, would you come on with Buddy if I could make it happen? And I kind of laughed and said, well, I'd think about it. I haven't heard back from her. I assume either Buddy chickened out or he's sharpening a fireplace log. But yeah, I would have loved to have gone on and asked him that very question. I think he likes to, have that out there. It kind of makes him more relevant and people pay attention to him more. I have heard there are people who are some of his loyalists who have been meeting and talking about it. And anything can happen. So, I mean, hey, we've been around Rhode Island long enough never to rule anything out. So if he does come back, I'm sure I'll write about him for someone.
You've been a student of Rhode Island government and its foibles for a long time. As you prepare to transition to a different job, do you see things that could be done to reduce corruption and improve government in Rhode Island, or do you think basically people get what they vote for?
That's a very good question, because I think that so many times people focus so much on the process and the institutions and the apparatus, and I think that really misses the human's quotient in the whole thing. You know, two of the things I always remember that I think motivate Rhode Island politics, Roger Beegin, the former lieutenant governor, once said to me, you know, people always talk about good government and whatnot, but the only time you ever hear from constituents is when they want something from you. So that's number one. And then John Lynch, the legendary criminal defense lawyer who defended Ed DePreet and a host of other people, calls himself the country lawyer, even though he's from Warwick. He once said to me, you know, he was talking about the relationships that govern Rhode Island. He said, you have to understand that people here grew up, they sat in the same pew together at church. And so those relationships, they can go deeper and they can transcend party boundaries. And that's what really makes this place tick.
Mike Stanton, investigative reporter for the Providence Journal and soon to be a professor at the University of Connecticut. Thanks for speaking with us.
Thank you, Ian. My pleasure, and good luck to you.